This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Issues 2018. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Cody Charvet, Interim Director, Sedgwick County Emergency Management. Welcome to Issues 2018, Cody.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
I've known you for so many years, and how do you pronounce your last name?
You got it. It's dead on.
Charvet?
Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been with Sedgwick County now, Cody?
Well, with the county, I've been there since 99, so into my 20th year, and the first 10 were spent at Emergency Communications, 911. And for the last 9-plus years, I've been in emergency management.
Now, I thought you had been a dispatcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you were talking
right
about there. What kind of a job is that, Cody?
I'll tell you what, those are some of the hardest working and most underpaid people in the county anywhere. They just go through such a high-stress job day in, day out. It's so hard to keep people because the job burns them out very quickly. And so there's always a staff shortage. They're always fighting, you know, with overtime issues. Those are the unsung heroes.
Well, you can.
For sure.
You've been a broadcaster too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were a broadcaster several years ago, and you know, checking in with those people and talking to them every now and then as news reporters, they are always in a hurry. It seems like it's quite a stressful job.
It is a heroic job, honestly, but they sure don't get the recognition they do. Now, I don't want that to sound like their administration doesn't take care of them, because the administration does. They
sure
absolutely promote them and do whatever they can to keep their employees happy, but it's the job itself.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody's calling them on a good day. They're always calling them on one of the worst days of their lives, and that they want to yell at somebody. They can't yell at who they're mad at, so they yell at the dispatcher instead.
And this swatting thing the other day points out the responsibility that they have on the phone to try to make sure that they're getting the facts right.
Right.
Wow.
It's not always easy to put those pieces together.
I know. It sounds easy, but everybody's job sounds easy until you have to do it.
Until you have to do it.
Give us an idea of the size of your department, Cody. How many people? What are your facilities like? Things like
that. Well, we are in the public safety building downtown at 714 North Main. We're on the first floor, and dispatch is on the second floor. And the main room of our facility is the Emergency Operations Center. So I'm going to throw out the acronym EOC quite a bit during this, probably. So that's what I'm talking about, the Emergency Operations Center. Our staff right now is seriously depleted. We're still looking at hiring a full-time director, and our warning systems coordinator, John Crosby, who's been with the county full-time for 26 years, plus another 12 years as a volunteer, so 38 years total. He's retiring effective at the end of this month. So eventually we hope to get back to a full staff of 6.
Okay. Well, I remember Crosby. I've known his name. I may have met him over the years. What kind of budget do you have there?
That's a
gigantic budget.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I should know the answer to that, because I just had to work on the budget for the first year as interim director, and I cannot remember the size of our budget off the top of my head. I apologize.
That's all right. Give us an idea of your basic mission of emergency management. What do you do?
You know, that's a good question, because a lot of folks out there in the community probably don't have a really good idea. I go out and do a lot of teaching, a lot of introductions to emergency management type of stuff, and I said, all right, pop quiz time, take out a piece of paper, you're going to write me an essay on what emergency management does. And you see the fear in the eyes. I say, no, I'm just kidding. But if I was serious, you know, I would expect that to be kind of hard, because most of what we do is behind the scenes. We don't want to be in the public eye, because usually if your emergency manager is very visible, that means something bad has gone on in your community, or you're in the middle of a disaster. So what we try and do is, before the disaster, a lot of planning and preparation, helping folks to try and mitigate against the effect of disasters. We work with all partners across the entire community, first responder, faith-based, private organizations, just to try and make sure that the community is as ready to respond as possible, as resilient as possible. And actually, one of the best ways to make sure the entire community is ready is to make sure individual households are ready. So we do a lot of outreach to community groups and just talk about the basics of emergency preparation. Build a kit, make a plan, stay informed.
Of course, you fly into action during severe weather events, but how do you prepare for other possible disasters?
Well, we use what we call an all-hazards approach to disaster preparedness. We have a hazard analysis where we've looked at all the different things that could go wrong in our county, and we've mapped out like 34 different options. Now, we don't expect people to have 34 different plans. So we say use an all-hazards approach, which basically the concept behind that is, if you do it properly, if you prepare for one disaster of a certain type, you're really preparing for all disasters that affect you in that same way. And a good illustration of that is, let's say the power is going to be out at your home for the next week. Does it really matter if the reason the power is going to be out is because a tornado came through and ripped down the power lines, or an ice storm came through and ripped down the power lines? What matters at the end of the day is, I'm not going to have power for the next week. How do I heat or cool my home? How do I feed my family? That type of thing. So we tell people, basically it comes down to having two types of plan, a shelter-in-place plan and an evacuation plan. And if you have put a few twists on each one of those, you're going to be properly prepared for just about any disaster.
More about that in a minute, but it sounds like what you're telling me is, I remember something from Boy Scouts that said, be prepared.
Exactly right, yeah. Boy Scouts and emergency managers go hand in hand.
Do you have levels or categories of emergency situations?
We do. I mentioned the EOC earlier and activations for that. We have basically three different levels of that. We'll go into a monitoring mode anytime that something just pops up on our radar, whether it's a real radar or virtual radar. If there's a high threat for severe weather and storms are starting to fire in Kingman County or Barber County, we'll keep an eye on them just in case they start moving this way. There's no need to take action yet, just keeping an eye on the situation. Same thing if, you know, we've had different monitoring situations where we thought there might be a chance for civil unrest after this, that, or the other thing. We're monitoring the police radio. We're monitoring our partners and what they're doing. And then the next level up for that is a partial activation. Something has hit or something is about to hit, and we're starting to bring people together. There's a high probability this is going to escalate, let's put it that way. And so we might bring together two or three key partners so that we can be proactive instead of reactive. And then the third level is full activation. It's hit. It's pretty bad. We need to get everybody into the room, and that's 21 different agencies in our EOC. We need to get everybody in the room. Let's sit down. Let's figure out how bad it is and how we're going to handle this. Do we need to keep everybody here? Can we send certain sectors home? That kind of thing.
You're talking about a lot of people in your corps of six people. How about training for all of these folks?
We do a lot of training ourselves. We bring in even more training from outside providers. There are a lot of federally funded courses out there that we bring in from all over the country. They'll send us instructors at no cost to us. It's all FEMA funded. So we do a lot of training that way. Then, of course, we'll work with any of the local partners to do their own internal training if they need, and a lot of times they don't need us. They're taking care of that themselves. But, yeah, the bigger picture, we try and take the lead on getting those folks into training classes.
Now talk about, Cody, if you will, some of the emergencies you've responded to in recent years.
Well, actually,
I haven't had any massive one that I remember.
The only big one that we've had in my entire time there is the April 14th, 2012 tornado that hit Oakland and southeast Wichita. Okay. That was a multi-operational period. We were in the EOC for about 36 hours until we stood down operations there. But, of course, the effects out in the field were a lot longer than that. There was a long time into recovery, and there may even be people that are still working on recovery down there. Recovery after disasters can sometimes take years upon years. Even down in Greensburg, there are probably still, you know, elements of recovery in effect there. The other things that we've dealt with recently, most recently, would probably be flooding events that we had down in Derby and Mulvane. You might remember the Old Settlers Day flood, and then there was another flood a month after that, two 500-year flood events within about a month, which is exceedingly rare.
I'm just thinking about what happens if there's that kind of emergency, the impact. So it's so much confusion. You've got to get in there. Is it you guys who get in there and try to make some sense? How many were injured? How many houses were hit? Things like that.
Yeah,
get some numbers for us media types.
Exactly right. That's one of the functions that we serve in the Emergency Operations Center. The folks that come into the EOC, what we tell them is, you know, they've all got their own silo, their own agency, their own department. We say, okay, first of all, look down your silo. See what your department is doing, what the effect is on you, and then look up. We'll go around the room. Everybody will kind of give us an update on what their agency's impact is, what they're doing out in the field. And then we're all monitoring the same radios that's going into dispatch. And so as they're reporting in houses that are damaged, injuries, fatalities, God forbid, all that type of stuff, we're putting it together. We've got our own internally developed information management program. It's called our E-Log, or emergency log, E-Log for short. And that's what we use for that situational awareness, because you're right, that's critical. If it's a big disaster, one of the first things you got to figure out is, how bad is it? Where do we need to send our resources that we haven't got them to yet? And that's the kind of information management that we're doing in the EOC. We're doing other things as well. We're not running the incident from there. We're doing support. But one of the biggest support functions we can serve is getting all that information together so our decision makers, like, you know, the commissioners or the mayor of the affected jurisdiction or whatever, right, they've got one place that they can go and look for all that information.
Yeah, because they've got to figure out how big the thing is.
Oh, too. Exactly right. They don't know how much help they're going to need to ask from the state, for example, or can we handle it here or locally.
And a good point. Do you coordinate with the state?
Yes. All coordination with the state for disaster has to go through the county emergency manager.
Okay.
Any city that tries to go, you know, do an end run around that and go directly to the state, they're going to get told, have you talked to your emergency manager yet? And if the answer is no, that's the end of the conversation.
Okay.
Yep.
Hey, what's the hardest part of dealing with an emergency from your perspective, Cody?
Well, I think just what we were talking about before, getting a handle on the information flow first up, because there's just such a chaotic mess in the immediate aftermath of any disaster. You're getting reports of situation A from one unit in the field, and somebody else comes up on another channel and tells you something slightly different, and then you've got to confirm that. So trying to get a handle on that information and then informing the public of what's really true. Sometimes the information doesn't come out as quickly as folks would like, but we don't want to give you bad information and then have to do a retraction 30 minutes later. So we take a little bit of time to make sure we're getting everything out there and then letting the public know exactly what it is they need to do.
And you're listening to Issues 2018 on the Intercom radio stations. Our guest is Cody Charvet, Interim Director, Sedgwick County Emergency Management. Let's talk a little bit about severe weather emergencies. The first thing people think about is tornadoes, right?
Exactly right. And with good reason, tornadoes get the most attention around here for sure. One of the things I preach constantly in my severe weather safety classes is it does not take a tornado. The type of severe thunderstorms that we can see around here, they can produce winds that are strong enough, hail that is big enough to do damage, injuries, even fatalities sometimes. There was a derecho event, which is a very strong straight line wind maintained across hundreds of miles, knocking over homes, mobile homes, all that type of thing, and moved through southeast Kansas a couple years back, and just a wind event, and I don't want to say that, you know, people in the air can't see me, I'm doing air quotes.
A straight wind.
But a straight line wind is capable of doing that kind of. So that's the big thing. Now, back to the tornadoes, you know, we do have a spotter network of volunteers that we use. We're also tied in with the National Weather Service and all our media partners like KNSS. And as that information is coming in from our people, or information is coming in from your spotters, from the TV spotters, whatever it is, we're all pooling that information together now. We have something, I almost hate to use this term because it almost makes it sound trivial, but we have a special chat room that all the members of the media, the National Weather Service, and the emergency managers around the state are part of. And it has increased our communication ability so much. It's just ridiculous. There have been multiple times I have been sitting in the EOC with a TV on in the front of the room. I type in a report from my spotter into that chat room, and within 10 seconds, I'm hearing it read back to me from the TV at the front of the room. I mean, that's just unheard of, to have that type of instant turnaround, that type of instant communication with the public. So it has been a great help, and it's a job that we take seriously. You know, I mentioned earlier our monitoring activities. Anytime we're under a threat for severe weather, we're communicating with all our partners beforehand, our schools, our police, fire, EMS, people that work outside, that type of thing. Then as the situation starts to unfold, we're keeping an eye on it. We're trying to keep the public informed.
You know, and in contrast to the way that information moves, like you just gave a terrific example. I know that you worked in radio years ago, mm-hmm. and you know, if you've kind of been watching how this has developed over the years, this instantaneous information, it has to save lives, Cody.
Absolutely.
It has to.
Yeah, it does. And we're working on even better ways that we can to get information directly to the public. I mentioned our e-log, our emergency log. It's part of our application, our Sedgwick County Government app. And you may have some questions about that later, but since it's tied into what we're talking about now.
Go ahead.
Folks, if they download the app to their phone, they can have access to that same emergency log that I was talking about. Now, they're not going to see everything that we're posting internally, but everything that we want to share with the public, and there's lots that we share with the public, all the spotter reports and things like that during the disaster, we're going to share them to our e-log, and folks can see that. And it's not quite there yet, but we're really close to adding a new enhancement to this that folks, is going to be really time-critical, life-saving. It's akin to wireless emergency alerts, and you know what those are in your phone that are based on your those are based on GPS, but it's a part of the emergency alert system that sends a specific message to your phone about what's going on. Well, we're developing a feature for our app that we can post basically an emergency notification to our e-log, and it will chime or buzz your phone or whatever it is to let you know you've just received an emergency alert from Sedgwick County Emergency Management. Folks can look it up. And it doesn't have to be weather-related. It could be any type of disaster relation.
Yeah.
And we're going to make sure that we don't overuse it. It's only going to be used in life-threatening situations.
Mm. Okay. Now, do you also respond to cold weather emergencies?
Well,
don't get as much publicity.
Right. We don't. A lot of what we do in the cold weather part of it is preparation, just reminding folks, hey, have that weather time disaster kit in your car, the basic things that you might need, some extra food, some extra water in case you get stranded in a snowbank somewhere. We even include things like a shovel if you want to try and dig yourself out. Kitty litter is good for getting traction on ice, yeah, and that type of thing. Those are some things that we recommend. Now, the state, if we're looking at a really big snow event, for example, the state now will send out the National Guard and some emergency response teams that will help people who get stuck in the snowbank. We've seen that a lot recently, but it's all been up along the I-70 corridor because they're the only ones that are getting snow the last several years.
Yeah. Who makes a call to activate your people when a disaster strikes? Who carries that responsibility?
Well, it starts with our emergency management duty officer, and that we rotate among the staff, whoever has that responsibility. Usually it's going to be pretty obvious what's going on, but if they're not sure, they'll just coordinate with whoever their boss is, which right now is me, or if I'm not sure, I'll get with my boss, the director of public safety, and we'll make a decision. You know, do we need to activate for this? It's real easy to do a partial activation. And it's easy to do a full activation. It just involves a lot more moving parts.
So when something like this comes up, how do you behave in that situation? Do you turn into General Patton?
I try not to.
Because when that happens to me, I pretty much, I don't care who's there, I'm start hollering at people doing this, doing that.
Well, it is.
And they understand.
Sure, they do. Somebody needs to be in charge of the show.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to be the stage director. And in the Emergency Operations Center, that falls on the emergency manager. We're not running the event. If it's a fire event, if it's a wildland fire, for example, fire is going to be in command, especially out in the field.
Yeah.
Fire is going to be the one that we're turning to the most frequently in the EOC. But still, there needs to be somebody that says, okay, folks, I need you to do this here and get on the microphone and say, okay, 5 minutes from now, we're going to have a report out around the room. And then when that 5 minutes is up, okay, it's time for report outs. We're going to you first. Go, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, that does fall on the emergency manager, and that's an accepted role by everybody in the room.
Do you do educating with the schools? Do you that kind of thing?
I do as much with the schools as I can. Any invitation, any opportunity I can get to get out with the schools, I love to get out and talk to the kids. It may not be strictly in the schools, too. Like during the summer, Mays PD does what they call a 911 camp all week long.
And, wow.
And they just bring in all kinds of different first responders. From 911, from police, fire, sheriff, all those types of things. I take my tornado machine out there and talk to the kids. And so that gets me a little hooked to get their attention. And then we can start talking about, you know, sure, and it's like I tell them, most of what you have to do in preparation, it's going to be your parents' responsibilities. But there are things the kids can help with. They can say, hey, mom and dad, did you remember to pack pet food for our pet? And I encourage them, okay, your mom and dad probably know where you're supposed to go for a tornado shelter. But have they ever talked to you about it? So talk to your mom and dad. Make sure you know where in the house we're supposed to shelter. Where is our evacuation point just outside the house? If we all have to get out for a fire, we should all gather at the mailbox, at the tree in the neighbor's yard, whatever it might be.
That is basically for everything.
That's true.
House fire, anything.
Yep.
Where is that gathering point outside?
Exactly. Because if everybody knows in a fire, you get out the quickest way possible. But if I go out the side door, you go out the back door, and my brother goes out the front door,
where's
and
Jimmy?
We all just stay there. Exactly.
Yeah.
Where's Mac? You know, we all have to gather at one point so we can count noses and make sure everybody's accounted for.
Cody, how is your working relationship with other local cities and other counties? Do you keep in touch with anybody?
I like to think it's great on both levels. Certainly on the city level, we have somebody right now that's their title as community liaison, and she makes contact with them on a somewhat regular basis just to make sure. I get requests all the time from different cities within the county here that, you know, they would like our help with this project or that project, and we're always responsive to them. As far as the other counties in the region, emergency management is very regional-based. We recognize that, you know, your first help in these big disasters are going to be the people right around you in the other counties, your mutual aid, your other emergency managers. And we have regional meetings on a regular basis, had one just earlier this month down in Winfield. And as it turns out, I just happen to be on the board of directors for the Kansas Emergency Management Association. I'm the South Central Regional Vice President.
Okay.
So I help maintain not just the Sedgwick County relationship with these other counties, but I help as much as I can the communication between all counties in our region. And we've got a great group of people around here. There's lots of very good relationships there, and I'm very confident in the quality of help that would come if we need it.
You get everything you need from us media folks, Cody.
I think so. The question is, do you get everything you need from us? And the answer there, I'm not sure I want to hear it. But
really, is it a good relationship?
I think it is. Yeah. And it's gotten a lot better in recent years. I mentioned the chat room that we are all part of, and that's a byproduct too of National Weather Service kind of acting as the go-between all of us. Because especially when it comes to weather, we all have the same interest, and that's serving the public and keeping people safe, keeping people alive. So I think it's gotten a lot better. They have an annual meeting called the Integrated Warning Team. Out in Lyons is usually where we have it, and it's done a great things to at least on the weather side of it to improve those relationships.
What's the biggest challenge in your job?
Well, depends on where we're at in terms of operations. Day to day, my biggest challenge is just paperwork. Any government job's got paperwork that for days.
Yeah,
In disaster operations, I would say, again, there's a lot of paperwork that has to go on, but I've got a lot more help for that. The biggest challenge, the biggest hardest part is that information gathering.
What makes a job fun?
Oh, getting out and talking to people. I love doing that. I do the annual severe weather safety classes every year, so there's 25, 26 of those right there. And then I'll do dozens upon dozens of community outreach and training presentations throughout the year. My background from college was in radio, TV, and film, so I've gotten with our communications department there, and we do a lot of training videos which I really enjoy doing too.
All right. Well, I knew that about you. You had that media background, but we've known each other for a long time now. We won't say how long.
No, no.
But where are you from?
I'm grown up around here. I was born and raised down in Belle Plaine in Sumner County and have lived here basically all my life.
But you were a kid. You probably wanted to do something when you grew up. I don't know. What did you want to be when you grew up? This is a question I ask people. It's interesting.
That's fine. I can't remember if you knew the ultimate answer and if you're just trying to get to me or not. Actually, my first college experience straight out of high school, I was in the Catholic seminary. And so I thought for a number. Okay, so you didn't remember that. All right. I don't know if that had ever come up or not. I was actually studying to be a priest at one time.
I didn't know that.
No, okay. Well, when I decided to leave the seminary, what I wanted to get into was public safety. And so I have a lot of years as a volunteer in fire department background and EMS.
Listen, I'm glad I asked that. I never knew that about you, Cody. It explains a lot.
A lot of people listening who might not have known that about me either, so I spilled the beans.
Our guest, Cody Sharman, Interim Director, Sedgwick County Emergency Management. Thanks for being with us, Cody. That's all for this edition of Issues 2018. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.